Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for the Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. Today is a special Thanksgiving broadcast, and my guest is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing their latest release, titled Chicken Soup for the Soul, Find Your Inner Strength. The book is a collection of 101 empowering stories of resilience, positive thinking, and overcoming challenges. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am good. I'm thankful to be on your show today.
Fantastic. It is always a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Find Your Inner Strength is an awesome book. The stories are very inspiring and uplifting, and this book really makes a great gift for the upcoming holiday season. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Let us start by talking about the upcoming Thanksgiving. How is Chicken Soup celebrating Thanksgiving this year?
Well, we're a hardworking crew here, so we're working right up until the holiday. I think we're all really excited this year and very grateful because we have a number of books on the bestseller lists in the U.S. and Canada, and so it makes you feel really good when you've worked so hard and then you actually discover that people are reading the books. And so I know that, but I am very grateful for this year, that all of this hard work seems to be paying off. And I think we're also really thankful because we're so excited about our books, because the one we're going to talk about today, about finding your inner strength, and then the one that we're starting to market that's coming out in 3 weeks, which is called The Power of Forgiveness, are both books that we feel are super important and really will help people and have really affected us here. Reading these stories, you can't help but be improved because you gain perspective. You realize how lucky you are. You know, these books make you count your own blessings, value the relationships that you have in your life. And I know that I personally am very thankful this year for my office life, believe it or not. And I know, you know, they always say that on your tombstone, you're, you know, nobody's ever going to say, I wish I'd worked more. But I have to say that we have stretched such strong personal relationships in our office that it's just great walking in here every morning. We're all united. We're working for a common goal, which is to spread all of our great lessons and messages from Chicken Soup for the Soul. And we're like a big family, and so I really enjoy the people I work with, and that I am grateful for every single day, because I know many people go to work and they trudge in and they think, okay, I'm going to put in my 8 hours and then I get to get out of here, and I walk in and I think, oh boy, I get to see my friends. So I'm very thankful for that.
That's wonderful. Looking back the last 5 years, you guys have made tremendous amount of accomplishment within the 5 years. What are some of the highlights?
I think some of the highlights are basically relaunching our books. I mean, when I came in as publisher in 2008, I changed the way we did our titles. Instead of Chicken Soup for the Something Soul, I changed it to Chicken Soup for the Soul, and then a topic, which completely freed us. Just changing the titles completely freed us to do any topic we wanted. I mean, how would I have done Chicken Soup for the Finding Your Inner Strength Soul? That wouldn't have worked. But Chicken Soup for the Soul, Find Your Inner Strength, that works. And then I think that we've revamped the book line and we've made it incredibly relevant and even more helpful than it used to be. And our covers just have so much punch to them. When you look at the cover of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Find Your Inner Strength, and you see that strong lioness striding towards you on the cover. She looks like she's about to jump out of the cover. You get that feeling of strength. And so I feel really great about how we have made the book line so exciting, so empowering, and also just plain fun over the last 5 years. And then we've done some other really fun things in the last 5 years. We have increased the visibility of our pet food line, which you've actually had for more than 10 years, but that's even more fun now. We've redesigned all the packaging. There are stories on the packages. We've reformulated the pet food, so it's also more up-to-date, meaning less grain, more protein. And then we've launched our food for people, which is sold at Walmart and other places. And so it's been really fun taking this chicken soup for the soul feeling and now expanding it into other products that we think are really great for people, too. So we're not just on the bookshelves anymore. We're also on the pantry shelves. So, yeah, it's been super fun. But I have to tell you, no matter how much fun I'm having at work, what I'm most personally thankful for is the four children that my husband and I have. We each have two from our first marriages, and the four children have melded together. We've been married 15 years. The children melded together instantly, calling each other brother and sister, and that has been the best thing. And in 2014, we had two weddings. child number two and child number three got married this past summer, so that was really, really great.
That's totally awesome. I'm so glad to hear you sharing those wonderful, thankful news for this year. So that's really, really, really great. Regarding finding your inner strength, you have been quoted referring to the book as the most powerful collection that Chicken Soup has ever put together. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, when you know, I made this book, Find Your Inner Strength, because I realized that so many of the stories we received were about ordinary people finding extraordinary reserves of strength and courage and resilience and positive thinking inside them. Mm-hmm. And they always say they never would have believed that they had so much inner strength. So I decided we should put together a collection of stories about people finding that inner strength. But you can imagine if you're running stories about finding your inner strength, that means you're running stories about people overcoming all different kinds of challenges. So the collection is 101 stories about people encountering huge challenges. And so the stories are very moving. I mean, you meet some really positive role models in these pages. And reading thousands of stories that were submitted to get it down to the 101 that we published, it meant that we as a group of editors were exposed to a lot of human emotion.
Yeah.
And while the people writing the stories were not being emotional, they were, you know, rather matter-of-fact. Like, this happened to me, this is how I handled it. Because these people are also strong and courageous, they almost don't even know anymore how awesome they are. But we were very moved as a group of editors. Mm-hmm. And I found that when I was doing the final edits to the stories, I had to keep stopping and giving myself a little rest time because I couldn't go through them at my normal pace because I had to stop and absorb these intense human experiences that these people were having and kind of get over them. Otherwise, I was just going to be on overload because it's just one powerful story after another.
Yeah,
and I was really moved and really in awe of these people. And it also made me feel so blessed because when you read about these incredibly inspiring people, who don't complain about their situations. They just, you know, get up off the floor and deal with their situations. It makes you realize how lucky you are. I mean, these people have such fortitude and good humor and a lack of self-pity. So I feel like it's one of the most powerful collections of stories I've put together in the 6 years that I've been a publisher. It might be the most powerful collection of stories. I know that it really had an effect on me and the rest of my team.
When you explain yourself that way, what came into my mind, Amy, is the fact that these are emotional vitamin pills that you and your editorial staff have an opportunity to take a tremendous amount of dosage of. I would think, I mean, wow, it's like it just sort of coming into you guys as you read this. It's got to be something that really affects your professional life. I mean, you had mentioned about yours, and I'm sure with your team, they too feel a little bit different.
You know, you're so right. And I think that if people could read one a day,
yeah,
it would be like having a one a day emotional vitamin pill.
Yeah.
But I also think that even though they could be viewed like emotional pills or emotional vitamins,
yeah,
I think they're actually more like potato chips and you can't stop reading once you start. So I was thinking about that. I was thinking if we ever put this out, we said, like, this is your one-a-day emotional vitamin pill. We've got emails. I'm sorry, I finished my whole bottle in 1 week, you know?
There you go.
Because people just keep saying, oh, I got to read one more. I got to read one more. I got to read one more. And I've had people tell me that about the books. They've said, I just couldn't stop. I just kept going for one more, and one more.
Yeah.
But that's a really good thought. It gave me an idea for another book, except I know
oh,
I can't have a book that's like 101 emotional vitamin pills, because I know everybody would say, I'm sorry that I took all my pills in 1 week.
That's exciting. Well, let's put it this way. How about my potato chips laced with vitamins? Nowadays, about everything that you eat has got vitamin this, vitamin that.
Oh, and also, you know, they have all those flavored potato chips now that are flavored
with right,
everything
yeah.
under the sun.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's true. All right, yeah, our books are, our stories are more like potato chips. You can't stop.
Interesting. How did chicken soup pair up with Fran Drescher?
Well, that was a cool story because I was talking to one of her agents, and her agent was telling me about, you know, how Fran has done this amazing thing. She faced up to this uterine cancer. She had a hysterectomy and lost, you know, all those parts when she was only 42 and therefore could never have children, and that was a huge disappointment to her. And she just didn't feel sorry for herself. She just went through it, said, you know, bad things happen to good people, and she chose to pull herself up and make the best of it. And so she actually started a really wonderful organization called Cancer Schmancer. And what she did was she wrote the foreword for us for this book, and she talked a lot about how you summon your inner strength and how you don't believe you have that strength until you need it. And she's so right. And then she points out that side by side with grief lies joy. And she talks about how she turned pain into purpose. And she says sometimes the best gifts come in the ugliest packages. And, of course, she wouldn't wish cancer on anyone, and she wished she didn't have it. She wished she hadn't had it, but she did turn it into a gift for herself. And she created a gift for everyone else by starting Cancer Schmancer. And Cancer Schmancer is an organization that helps people who have cancer, but doesn't just do that. It also helps people with early detection and with prevention, and it does a lot of advocacy for people with cancer. And so she's not only fighting cancer, but she's also promoting healthy living through Cancer Schmancer. And Fran is giving all of her royalties from the book to Cancer Schmancer. So the royalties from the book will go to Cancer Schmancer and help a lot of people, not just people with cancer, but helping people prevent ever getting cancer. She's very into detoxing your life, detoxing your body, detoxing your home, using exercise to detoxify your body, exercise and diet, emotional stress. You know, she feels that emotional stress hurt her, might have led to her cancer. The amazing thing about Fran is that when she wrote the foreword for the book, she talked about the cancer. She didn't even talk about the other negative things that happened in her life that she had to overcome, including being assaulted and raped in front of her husband. I mean, that was an unbelievable thing, which for many people would be all they would ever talk about for the rest of their lives. And she didn't even mention it in her foreword for to the book. So that's why we teamed up with Fran. We thought she was a great model of somebody finding their inner strength, and we also wanted to use the royalties from the book to support a good organization, and that is Cancer Schmancer.
Wonderful story. Of course, she is very well known for her role as the nanny in the TV series, The Nanny.
Yeah, and she has a new show on now that's about, I haven't seen it yet, but it's about a woman who, I think, divorces her ex-husband because he's gay and then they're still friends, and that's her case in real life.
Why is it important to read stories of people going through hardship?
I think it gives us all perspective, and it gives us wonderful role models who show us what is in fact possible. And it's so interesting that even people going through hardship really get a lot out of reading stories from people going through the same kind of hardship as them or other kinds of hardship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who has cancer reads this book and says, oh, well, at least my house didn't burn down. And someone whose house burned down reads this book and says, well, at least I don't have cancer. I mean, everybody gains perspective by reading about other hardships. And I know reading stories like this have prepared me. You know, if I get cancer one day and the doctor tells me, I'll be thinking, well, I knew this possibility was coming and I know what to do because I've, you know, read all these stories, and I'm sure that it will be way different than I can imagine, because you probably can't really imagine it unless it's happened to you. But I feel like I'm starting to build up some reserves of perspective, strength, from reading about all these other people, saying, okay, when that awful day comes for me, if it does, I will draw on these reserves of strength that I have built up from reading the stories from all of these amazing people.
So true. For me personally, over the years that I've done this show with Chicken Soup, in reading the various stories, what got to me is the fact that I'm seeing bits and pieces of my life in the respective stories. Again, I'm referring to that sort of vitamin shot that I'm getting, or in this case, the potato chips laced with vitamins. It sort of gave me that inner strength and the validation of the things that I've gone through and how I overcame those situations, so to speak, as life is a journey in itself.
You know, I think you're right, because when I was a kid, I had a lot of surgeries and I had a life-threatening birth defect, and I had a lot of surgeries. And so when I was a little kid, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old, I was in the hospital all the time getting cut open. And I hadn't really thought about it as an adult until I started reading all these stories. And then I read all these stories and I thought, oh, I guess I was kind of strong in the past. I guess I've got that in me. And it made me feel a little more like I can handle things and power through things, since I did it when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's true. It makes you realize what you've gone through yourself and what you've already been able to handle, and it shows you the power that you have as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I mean, there was one point in my life, at one time, a doctor asked me, are you depressed? And I said, no. Am I down? Yes. But I'm not depressed. Life goes on, and in reading all these stories, it just sort of like, wow, it's nice. That's how the only way I can explain it, and there are bits and pieces of it that sort of come back to me in the sense that, thank you, knowing that other people have gone through things worse than I have.
Yeah, and we're all part of one big community of people who have gone through things and survived them, and will probably go through more things in the future and survive them again. A lot of the people in this book are basically, I'll call them repeat offenders. You know, for one hardship, they get over it. 10 years later, oh, here comes another one. They go through that one, they get over it. 10 years later, here comes another one. And it is really interesting how many of them don't even bother to mention, you know, the longer ago one when they're talking about one of the new ones, because they already kind of dealt with that and put it in their past. But I think it was part of the building block, the building blocks of the fortitude and strength that they have now.
So true. Do you have any advice for people who want to reach out to someone in their life who is going through a hard time?
Yeah, I mean, besides the fact that you could give somebody my book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Find Your Inner Strength, I think that the most important thing that you could do, and this is what I have found, is to listen. And it's so interesting. Like, I remember when this couple we know, the wife, she was diagnosed with colon cancer. And my husband was talking to her husband one day and said to her husband, you know, do you want to talk about it? And her husband said, no, I'm fine. And then talked for the next 45 minutes, nonstop.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always remembered that. My husband just sat and listened for 45 minutes to the guy who said, no, I don't need to talk about it. And
yeah.
I bet when the 45 minutes were over, our friend probably would have said, well, I didn't talk about it. But he talked about it nonstop for 45 minutes. And I have found so often when I talk to somebody who's going through an illness or a divorce or they've just lost a spouse or mm-hmm. a parent, if I just listen, and they'll tell me stuff over and over. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had this, like with somebody mm-hmm. who's just experienced a death of somebody close to them, and they will tell you every single detail over and over
yeah.
again. And you
yeah.
just listen and you let them tell it over and over again. And to me, that's the absolute best thing you can do is just be there to listen. And people don't always want advice. I know men like
yeah.
to give women advice. And women kind of hate that, to all you men out there who are listening. Just listen. Don't give us advice. We just want you to listen and nod your head a few times understandingly, you know? But anyway, that's the most important thing. And it's funny, by letting people write these stories for us,
yeah.
it's like we're listening. And there's so many stories where people say, you're my first confidant. There was one story in here, I forget which one it was now, I'll find it in here, but the person said that she had never really told this story to anybody before, and she didn't really know why she was making our readers her confidant, but she was. But people want to talk about their stories. So
mm-hmm.
whether they're writing it or telling it, they just want somebody to listen.
So true. What people need is an opportunity just to express themselves, because that's a process of transference to get it out. That relieves stress for them, and they feel good. You're right that we don't exactly learn how to listen effectively. We need to do that because a lot of times people just need an outlet just to have the opportunity to express themselves.
Yeah, exactly, without us telling them what to do. Just mm-hmm. listen and nod your head.
Mm-hmm. So true. How can people turn a negative situation around?
I think the most important thing is to have perspective. I mean, mm-hmm. I know anytime anything negative happens to me, the first thing I think is, mm-hmm. and I guess the people with cancer think it's not something else, but I think that perspective is incredibly important for turning negative situations around, because if you have perspective and you don't take these things personally, you don't say, oh, I'm the only person in the world this ever happened to. Better if you say, oh, there are 5 million other people in the world right now this exact same thing is happening to. That helps you to deal with the situation yourself and stop feeling so sorry for yourself and just get busy improving your situation. And it's also really good to read the stories or listen to stories from people who've already been there, done that. And I think that's what happens with our books. I think with a book like Chicken Soup for the Soul, Find Your Inner Strength, people will pick it up, and if, let's say they have cancer, they're going to turn and read all the cancer stories in the book. Say, all
yeah.
right, these people already have done this. They've been there, done that. I can see what happened to them. Now they're talking about it in the past tense. My day will come when I will be talking about my cancer in the past tense. And so I just am now facing a year of hell, and I will make my way through this year of hell. And then I will be in the same position as this person whose story I just read in this book. So it's really important to put it in perspective. Realize you're not special. 5 million mm-hmm. other people are going through the exact same thing. So just deal with it. Move forward. It's going to suck, but you're gonna get through it. That's
yeah.
what I think really helps people. And that's why it's so important to have a positive outlook, because if you don't go into it feeling sorry for yourself, if you have a positive outlook, people will respond better to you. Let's say you have cancer and you're going to the hospital. If you have a positive outlook, that medical staff will respond better to you. You'll get better care. People will like coming into your room to check on you versus you saying, woe is me. Why did this have to happen to me? People who have a positive outlook, who smile, who are warm, they get that back. I always say a smile is like a boomerang. You throw one
mm-hmm.
out there, it always comes back. And so if you don't take a negative attitude, if you embrace a positive outlook, you act positive, even if you're not feeling it, then people will start acting positive back to you. And it will also open your eyes to the possibilities of the good things that can happen. So you've got to have a positive outlook. You have to have perspective and realize you're not the only one. Millions of other people have already done this. And open your eyes to possibilities of all the good things out there, and also count your blessings. Count your blessings at every moment, because, okay, you're sick, you're in the hospital, but your three kids come to visit you. Well, that patient down the hall doesn't get to have three kids come and visit her. So there's always something positive that you can see in your life. So I think it's very important.
I agree with that. You have to hang your hope on the positive things that are currently happening in your life. That will fuel your healing process.
Yeah. And I know we shouldn't be talking just about sickness when we're talking about this book.
Right.
There are so many other kinds of hardship that are covered in the book. I was just using that as an example. I mean, we've got substance abuse in the book. We have engaging in all kinds of self-destructive behavior like anorexia, overeating, undereating. We have people with chronic illnesses. We have people who are extremely short, like this guy who we're going to talk about later, who had a tumor that affected his growth when he was a kid. We have people with chronic conditions who have to really find a new normal in their life. We have people whose houses burned down. We have people whose kids died or have terrible illnesses. We have so many different hardships that people have overcome in this book. And so that, I think, is really great also, because you see people with all different kinds of problems overcoming those challenges, powering through loss and moving past disabilities and accepting a new normal in their lives and learning to reach out for help.
Yeah.
And one of the lessons from this book is, yes, you should ask for help, because when you ask other people for help, you empower them. You make them feel like they're more part of your community, part of your circle of friends who will help you. So it is really an incredible collection. I probably will read it once a year just because it will remind me of how good my life is.
The other thing that comes to mind is it's a humbling experience reading all these wonderful stories.
Well, it is, because you read these stories and you realize that in these pages you're meeting some of the most courageous, brave people, the best role models you've ever seen. I mean, it really is 101 role models, and it makes you feel so good about the power that we all have within us. That power is sitting there waiting for us to call on it. It's there. We all have it. But that's what's so interesting about people, is that we really do have the tools to make it through these things. The tools are inside us all along. We just have to go and get them. They're all up there on those hooks on the shelf, right? In your little inside tool room. You just have to go take them down and start using them. And this book makes that clear, because so many people say, hey, I was just an ordinary person. I didn't know I had any particular strengths. Then this unbelievable thing happened to me. I was burned over 40% of my body.
Yeah.
And, hey, I'm making the best of my life now, and I'm happy, and I'm stronger and better than I ever was before. So, yeah, it is very empowering to read these stories.
So true. I have selected several stories from the book as talking points for this morning, as usual. Please give us a short rundown of these stories, and we'll begin with the first story. I love watching the movie, and now it's a very interesting story to share with everyone. Overcoming Self-Destructive Behavior is the chapter, and the story is Spiral by Lee Steinberg.
Lee is such a great guy. So Lee is a sports agent, and he was a very famous sports agent. He's represented hundreds of professional athletes in the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, golf, Olympians. He represented the number one NFL draft pick 8 times. And he's always been not just a sports agent, but also an agent of change, trying to do good in the world. And so his career did serve as the inspiration for the main character in the movie Jerry Maguire. But little did everybody know that Lee had a problem with alcohol. And he ended up, when his father died, realizing that he had just been on this downward spiral because of alcohol. And he had an epiphany. And his father had taught him two core values. One was to treasure his relationships, and two was to have a positive impact on the world. And when his father died, he realized that the vodka had overtaken his life. He wasn't anymore living with these two core values, and so he entered a program, and he got better, and he stopped drinking, and he started to nurture his family again, and he had self-respect again. And so this story is about how he overcame his alcoholism, got back to what mattered to him, and now he's running a very socially conscious agency representing athletes, and he's using sports now to raise concussion awareness, to fight against domestic violence, bullying, racism, and to make a better world. And he's also doing a lot of work with green technologies, including wind, solar, recycling, resurfacing, using water technologies, you know, to increase the amount of clean water out there. So that was really good. And I actually started the book with the story from Lee because he's such a public person. And I thought it was really important for people to see that even somebody as famous and successful as Lee could have a major problem and then go through the steps necessary to overcome it.
So true. The next story is from the same chapter, Overcoming Self-Destructive Behavior, Don't Be Like Me by Wendy Letterman Horn.
So this story is really what Chicken Soup for the Soul is all about. And oh, this is the story that I was referring to before when I was talking about how somebody said she was going to share this with our readers. Yeah, she. So Wendy realized that she was using alcohol as a way to medicate her pain. She hadn't realized she was an alcoholic until she had a child who was diagnosed with autism. And then all of a sudden she started self-medicating with alcohol. And it got totally out of control, and her husband finally helped her realize that she had a really big problem when he showed her her vomit on her son's little fleece sleeper because she had thrown up on him while trying to rock him to sleep, and that was her rock bottom. And so she went into a recovery program, and she had to not only overcome her physical addiction to alcohol but face up to the reasons behind the addiction. And she finally realized that she thought it was her fault that her son had autism, which, of course, is ridiculous. And so she says near the end of her story, "Why am I writing this to a bunch of strangers? Because I don't want you to be like me. Don't be full of pride. Don't try to be so strong that you won't ask for help when you need it. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness." And I thought that was really important. And she says, "Don't be like me." I just thought that was a great story. And it's about alcoholism again, but it has a completely different message from Lee's story, which is why I could put them both in this chapter, because what she's really talking about is accepting help and letting the people you love you back and be part of your support system and help you out of your problem.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful story. The next story is from the chapter Fighting Health Challenges. And the story is Feeling Full by Samantha Molinaro.
So here's another example of self-destructive behavior, but in this case it's not alcoholism, it's anorexia. And this is from a girl who is still fighting her anorexia, but talks about how she knew she was killing herself. And she finally went to her parents and told them that she knew, and she knew she needed to go into a program. But it turned out there was a months-long wait to go into the program. So she had to get through a whole summer before she could enter this program in the fall. So her parents sent her off to summer camp, and it was a camp that had always been a refuge for her. She went off to camp, and she finally confessed to one of the other counselors in training that she was anorexic and started crying, and then the other counselor said to her, "One year ago, I was exactly where you are now." And so that girl helped her get through the time at camp, helped her try to eat a little more, exercise a little less. And this poor girl, Samantha, kept apologizing to her parents for having anorexia. And her parents kept saying to her, "Darling, would you be apologizing to us if you had cancer? Anorexia is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, it took a lot for me to finally understand that it is a disease. And when she learned that it was a disease and she could really internalize that, it really helped her to get better and not feel guilty for being anorexic. And so she's on the path to recovery now. And so many people are anorexic. I really wanted to include that story because we have so many people who talk about their problems with overeating. It's always valuable to include stories about people who have trouble with undereating as well.
That's the reason why I chose that story as well, because I think a lot of times we're in denial of the things that we do, and this is part of the scenario that you were talking about. It's not habit, it is a disease.
Exactly. Definitely a disease. Because all young girls think that they're fat and watch their calories and this and that, but not everybody becomes anorexic.
Right, right. The next chapter is Powering Through Loss, A Mother's Promise to Her Son by Ginger Katz.
So Ginger actually has come down to my office along with her husband Larry, and I really admire her for what she did. Her son died from a drug overdose when he was 20. And it was so awful because he had agreed that day with her that he was going to go into a treatment program the next morning. And like many drug addicts, when they agree that they're going to go into treatment the next morning, they have one final party the night before. He took drugs the night before. She was sleeping soundly because she was so relieved that he was finally going into treatment. So she didn't know that he was overdosing. And in the morning, she got up at 6:30, went into his room, and found him dead in his bed, which was just so horrible. The doctor told her, don't tell anybody what happened, because she was like a nice middle-class woman. She actually lived 20 minutes away from me in Connecticut, you know, like a regular little suburban town, middle-class community. Drugs don't happen to people like that. That was how her doctor viewed it. And it was really bugging her the night before the funeral that she was going to go to the funeral and lie about what had happened to her son. And then she said, you know what, I'm not going to lie. And she said to her husband, I'm going to speak out. If this is happening to us, it's happening to other families. And she says, they say the truth will set you free, and I believe it. Once I made the decision to be honest about my son's addiction, I became the strong one at the funeral. And she went to the funeral and she talked about drugs. And then she went and she spoke at her son's high school. And now she travels all across the country speaking to people about drugs. She wrote a story through the eyes of their family dog about losing his master, you know, her son, to drugs. And she's probably saved a lot of lives. And she says in her story, I made a promise to my son the day he died to do everything in my power to prevent this tragedy from happening to another family. I established the Courage to Speak Foundation, and its mission is to save young lives by empowering youth to be drug-free and encouraging parents to communicate effectively with their children about drugs. So I think she's a wonderful woman doing a wonderful thing, and I really wanted to share her story. And she says she never could have believed that she would be doing this. But here she is honoring her son's memory by trying to save a lot more lives by telling his story.
I chose the story simply because I thought that this is something that needed to be heard out there, because a lot of times, you're right, let's not hang our dirty laundry out there. And this is not about that. I think we have to put pride aside and seeing the overall essence of what happened. If you can make a difference in someone else's life, that's leaving the legacy of love that your son would want to have done in the first place.
She says she's proud of her son. The rest of his life, he was a good student. He was popular. He was athletic. He was handsome. He was bright. Everything else was good. And she doesn't want to dishonor him by just hiding the whole thing.
In fact, this
was the one fault that he had, and unfortunately it was a fault that killed him.
Right, right. The next chapter is Moving Past Disabilities, and the story is Pushing for Love by Lorraine Canistra?
Lorraine is a great young lady. She has cerebral palsy, and she doesn't let it stop her. And we've published a number of stories from her. She lives in a wheelchair. She lives on her own. She's fiercely independent. And she has, a support dog who helps her, picks things up off the floor if she drops things, that kind of thing. And her support dog jumped off her bed one day and tore his ACL. And it was going to cost $2,500 to repair it. Her poor dog was in so much pain. She said $2,500 might as well have been $1 million because she just lives on Social Security disability payments. She doesn't even have enough extra money to go to a movie. So she had to figure out how she was going to pay for the surgery for her dog. She and her dog would go out in her wheelchair on a nature trail that was near her apartment complex. So she finally decided she would do a fundraiser, and she would go 15 miles on this nature trail. And so she put flyers up, and all of her neighbors and people in the community who knew about her and her dog said they would contribute. And she worked at it and worked at it and built up her strength. And then she finally went out and pushed herself in her wheelchair 15 miles. It took her 12 and a half hours pushing. This girl with cerebral palsy pushing a wheelchair on this nature trail, which was not exactly like going around a high school track. I mean, this was an up and down, irregular trail. And she did it. And she raised enough money to pay for her dog's surgery and any other vet bills that he would have for the rest of his life. So she said one of the things she learned from this is that even though she's fiercely independent, that it really does make sense to ask for help once in a while. And she says amazing things can happen when you do.
Her story is so powerful because to me it exemplifies finding the inner strength. It doesn't matter who you are, if you focus yourself right on the things that you want to get done, then your innate values just come right out and give you the strength that you need to get it accomplished.
She's a great role model for all of us.
The next chapter is Accepting the New Normal, and the story is Beauty Worth Praising by Casey Hansen.
Yeah, what this woman went through, none of us would ever want to have to go through this. Casey Hansen was burned in a kitchen accident with hot oil from a fondue set. And her husband was an NFL player. If you've seen the NFL wives, when you watch a game and you see them panning into the audience and you see those gorgeous women in the stands, well, she's one of those gorgeous women in the stands. But she sustained burns to 40% of her body, all in the front, including her face. She had to wear compression garments for a year. She had to wear a hat. And she said, "Our tragedy stripped me of the beauty that made me feel accepted, normal, and worthy." So she went back out into the NFL community with these burns. And it was really hard for her because she was particularly in a segment of society where looks are everything. But she powered through it. She tried to get in shape. She said, "When I woke up each morning, I immediately put on my running shoes," which I thought was an interesting idea. I was thinking about that. Should I leave my sneakers right next to the bed and put them on right when I wake up? And once they're on, I guess I just have to keep going and put on the workout clothes. I thought that was a pretty interesting strategy. She said the simple act of putting on my shoes got me out of bed and on the right track. And she concludes the story by saying, "I would not wish for anyone to be burned, but on this side of my healing, I am grateful for the spiritual muscle I developed because of my burns. My old confidence that had been based on my looks faded, replaced with my new confidence based on who I am and what I believe." So she really found an inner strength and a spiritual core by going through this experience.
What I like about the story is that she actually found refuge in the Bible, in the verses of the Bible. And these are things that I personally have experienced, in the sense that when you go through a life-changing moment in your life, we all are looking for answers. sometimes we look wherever we need to look, that's fine. But in the end, we can find those wonderful answers in scriptures that, again, based on each individual out there. But the point is, if you turn back into within yourself and look for some spiritual understanding, you can find the answers and the inner strength that you look for. This brings me to the next chapter, Accepting What Makes You Different. The title of the story is The Enemy Within by Francis de Clemente.
Yeah, so Francis, he wasn't growing. He was a teenage boy, and all the other boys were starting to sprout, and he wasn't sprouting. And so when he got into high school at age 15, his doctor referred him to an endocrinologist, and it turned out that he had a benign brain tumor near his pituitary gland. And this pituitary gland problem was causing him to not grow. And so Francis still looked like a 14-year-old boy when he began his freshman year in college. And some of the other kids thought he was some kind of academic prodigy, you know, a Doogie Howser type. But he was their age. He was just really small, and he didn't have testosterone and growth hormone, and so he still had a baby face and a high voice, and it was incredibly painful for him. And then he did get some growth hormone and testosterone shots, and his body grew a bit, and he matured a bit. But still, he never caught up with the other kids his age. And then the tumor came back. And so he's just living with the fact that he's never going to achieve the full height, the full growth that he would have if it weren't for that tumor. And he said that he really hated himself. I mean, that's a very hard thing for a man to go through. And he finally had to say, I had to stop hating myself, to turn off the negative thoughts, and to accept who he was. And this poor guy also went through the early death of both of his parents from lung cancer. And I just felt that he was an incredibly strong person to live through all of this. And he said he thinks about the Popeye slogan, I am what I am, and that's all what I am. And he said that that's what he says to himself now. I am who I am, and I can't hate this man. And now he says, I am who I am, and I must love this man, because he is who he is, and he had the tumor, and that's where he is now. So I thought it was really admirable, and
yeah.
I thought, wow, when you read that story, no matter what you're going through, you think, wow, I certainly wouldn't want to have gone through what he has gone through.
Certainly. The next chapter is Learning to Reach Out. The story is Poison Ivy by Deborah Ayers Brown.
So this is a great example of a story about letting other people help you, because 2 days before she was facing major surgeries, Deborah was more concerned about clearing out the poison ivy in her rose garden than getting ready for her surgery. And she said it was as if the operations were just another chore on an endless slate of things to get done. And her husband and her friends were offering her help, but she didn't want to accept it. And you know, one of her friends said to her, you really have to accept help. You need to let your friends help you no matter how independent you are. And then when she was in the hospital, she started thinking about it, and she got home, and for the first time in her life, she let people help, said all of a sudden my life felt different, better. And she realized that when she let someone help her, she was allowing them to feel needed, and that by rejecting people's help during all those years before, she had actually been putting a little bit of a negative thing into her personal relationships, because people want to be part of your life and they want to feel needed, and when they're offering you help, it's because they know that you need it. And now she says that she feels a freedom she had not known, a freedom from constantly living up to her unrealistic expectations of herself. She said there's actually something incredibly generous about asking your family and your friends for help. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a really good lesson, because the people who are reading this book who are dealing with different challenges, I'm sure a lot of them are very independent people who don't know how to let people help them. And it is a constant refrain in this book. Let the people who love you and care about you help you. Because you need the help, and you'll also actually be helping your friends by letting them be part of your struggle instead of rejecting them.
So true. I chose the story simply because of that, in the sense that it's very difficult to accept help. We are more of a giving person than receiving.
That's true.
The next story is from the chapter Rising to the Challenge. And the story is Just One More Step, Darling, by Genevieve Gosselin.
So Genevieve, she weighs 300 pounds. But for some reason, she decided that she was going to do a 4.2K race. And obviously, she was going to walk it more than she was going to run it. But she just decided she was going to do it. And if you weigh 300 pounds and you're a woman, that is a long distance to go.
Yeah.
You know, even though for us, we'd say, well, that's not even 3 miles. That's not a big deal. But that is a big deal when you're that out of shape. And
yeah.
So she decided she was going to do it. And she practiced and she practiced and she practiced. And she did it. And what was really fabulous was that she found that all the people who were passing her to the finish line were encouraging her. The so-called real runners were giving her a nod. You know that nod you give to someone when
mm-hmm.
you're acknowledging we're both doing the same thing? She was getting the nod. And, you know, the fit runners who were racing past her were still giving her the nod. She was in the community. It didn't matter if she was, you know, 150 pounds overweight and was walking slowly to the finish line. She was part of the group. And so it really helped her a lot. She was very proud of the courage it took to register, the courage it took to show up and participate. She held her head high, and it took her almost an hour, which isn't terrible, really. That's really
yeah.
not bad. To go 3 miles in an hour, it's not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she said next year she's going to be running that same 4.2K. So I just thought that was really nice. And I really loved the fact that the real runners, as they raced past her, were giving her the nod.
Mm-hmm. The story is just a wonderful inspiration for people that think that I'm beyond help to really take a look at themselves and say it's never too late to get started.
That's right.
And the next chapter is Pursuing Your Dreams, Waiting for Kyra by Shannon Franklin.
So Shannon and her husband are both in wheelchairs. Shannon is actually a quadriplegic. She fell off her horse, and she lost the use of her four limbs, just like Christopher Reeve. And then her husband, Mike, he's a paraplegic, but he still has his upper body. But they're both in wheelchairs. They really wanted to have a child together. And they were trying to use a surrogate, and it wasn't working. And then her doctor had said to her, technically, you could carry a child, but it would be risky for you. And she finally said, you know what? I want to carry a child. I don't care if it's risky for me. I'm going to do it. So she carried her child, and they have a beautiful baby girl now. And I looked them up on the internet, this couple, and they are the most beautiful people with a beautiful daughter. And I was just so moved that you have these two former athletes, now wheelchair-bound, beautiful people, pursuing their dream, having that daughter now. And I just thought that was so encouraging for everyone else. And I hope that the people who read the story will go and look them up on the web and read more about them and look at pictures of them.
It's just a beautiful story that shows what hope can do for you.
Yeah, they pursued their dream, they had hope, and it worked out, and they got their daughter.
So true. The final chapter, Taking Back Your Life, and this is a wonderful story. I think it's just fitting for this Thanksgiving season, Out of the Ashes by Sandra Sackey.
So she did something I would do. She lives in she lives in an area where there were a lot of wildfires. And she could already see the hazy yellow glow emanating from the trees. And she started cleaning her house. And I would do the same crazy thing. Because she was half thinking, I'm never going to see my house again. So I want to clean it up and just see it perfect before I leave it. And she was half thinking, well, we're going to evacuate and then we'll be back in a couple of days. I might as well come home to a clean house. So she's furiously dusting and tidying up her house. And yes, packing things in their two cars to leave. As it turned out, they left their house in the San Diego area and their house burned to the ground. And so they went back to their house 3 weeks later. They were allowed back for the first time, and she saw, you know, little bits of their possessions burned up. She found a charred Christmas ornament. She realized that was where the attic had been, and the attic, you know, had collapsed. And then she realized that her other Christmas ornaments were right in that same burned spot because they had all been together in the attic, and they had all landed in the same place. She ended up finding her entire nativity set. She found a shepherd, then she found a wise man, then she found Joseph, then she found an angel, then she found the baby Jesus in the manger. All the pieces came up unbroken, but one thing had changed. The intense heat of the fire had burned all the color off them. They had all been hand-painted, and now all the figures were pure white. And she said, you know, this was like a purifying fire that burned in our lives, but we were not destroyed. And she actually, you know, really used her faith to get through it. And she actually opened up a Bible randomly, and her eyes fell on this passage from the Bible. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. And then it went on and it said, forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. So she has her nativity set, one of the only things that was recovered from the fire. And she now is saying, I know what's important. And what's important is that we're all okay. And things are just things. And I thought that was a really inspirational story also, because I can really imagine what it would be like to have a fire burn up everything that we own. But she gives us some perspective on how you just go ahead with your life after that.
So true. It's just a beautiful story. What is a key to resilience?
I think the number one key to resilience is perspective. I think once you realize that you're not the only one, that you still have lots of other blessings in your life, and that it's not time for a pity party, that's when you will then find that inner strength that's sitting inside all of us just waiting to be used.
Very interesting. Are there any other chicken soup products that will make wonderful gifts for this holiday season?
Of course there are. We have a number of wonderful books about Christmas. We have another really great book coming out in a couple of weeks that I referred to earlier, and you and I are going to talk about it right before Christmas. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Power of Forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It will be going on sale at Walmart in a couple of weeks and then rolling out in other stores across the country in mid-December. My co-author on that book is Anthony Anderson, the star of Black-ish. And that's an amazing book because it's all about using the power of forgiveness to repair your relationships with the people who matter to you most, which is a really great thing to think about doing before Christmas, right? When the whole family is gathering together, when you're seeing people you don't ordinarily see, time to pull out that power of forgiveness and let it work for you. So I think that, you know, you can find a Chicken Soup for the Soul book on a lot of different topics, but I think they really are welcome gifts because they show that you've actually put some thought into what would be right for that particular recipient.
So true. As time flies so quickly, I know you have some wonderful recipes for living life to share with us on this Thanksgiving show. So go ahead.
All right. So I've made a list of 5 ways to find your own inner strength based on what I learned from putting this book together. And I'd say the first lesson is figure out what makes you tick. Why are you doing what you're doing? For example, when Wendy Hoard realized she was using alcohol as a coping mechanism. Second thing is find a support partner. And sometimes you need one person who maybe is going through the same thing as you, and that way you guys help each other as you go through. And as you're getting better, you have an accountability partner. And if you have a list of goals, you tell each other what your goals are, and then you make each other stick to your goals. And then another way to find your inner strength is to turn your pain into purpose, like Fran Drescher did by starting the Cancer Schmancer organization, the way Ginger Katz did after her son died from drugs by starting the Courage to Speak Foundation. But you can turn that pain into purpose and look outside what you're going through to the good that you're doing in life. Another lesson that I learned from the book is to look for the silver linings, because you will always find them. You will always find those blessings in your life to help you get through your current hardship. And then finally, and we've talked about this a lot during this hour, let other people help you. You actually empower yourself by bringing other people into that inner circle. The inner circle is where you have people who get to help you. You are more powerful when you bring people into that inner circle and accept that help that people want to lovingly give to you. So those are my five ways to help you find your inner strength.
Those are wonderful recipes for living for this holiday season, Amy. They are just totally, totally awesome. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey. She is a master healer and a medical intuitive. Dr. Meg and I will be discussing her latest book titled The Children of Now, Evolution. It is the follow-up to her best-selling book, The Children of Now. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Amy, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listeners. And thanks so much for having me on today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.